Hello, I'm Sandy Toksvig, and welcome back to the News Quiz Extra. This is the extended version of the show, where we give you all the bits that were, well, frankly, too hot to handle for cuddly old Radio 4. So welcome to the dark side.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Church Times, read by Rory Morrison.
At a critical point in the voting, Archbishop Sentamu and three other members simultaneously went to the lavatory, after which voting patterns changed.
Our thanks to Nick Tatchell for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, our very own Jeremy Hardy, along with someone else's Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Independent and Sunday Times columnist Dominic Lawson, and for the first time in far too long, from the Wimbledon free sheet, Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, whose extraordinary rendition hit some embarrassing notes?
Well, you only have to hear me sing to know extraordinary rendition means torture. And it's more bad news for David Miliband and Jack Straw, our former foreign secretaries. It turns out that two of the leaders of the opposition movement in Libya have been tortured because of us, because MI6 and CIA handed them over as part of bringing Gaddafi in from the cold, which went a bit far. And now people are justifying it, saying that the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group were linked to Al-Qaeda. You think, or possibly tentatively, but these things are online. You know, you can get linked to Al-Qaeda accidentally trying to buy things on Amazon.
The really awkward thing now, from a foreign policy point of view, is that this chap whose torture we abetted is very likely to be part of the new leadership of Libya. And one of the first things he's asking for from the British government is an apology. And I'm not sure that Clinton's do a card. No, I don't do a card that covers secret rendition. They could do one. We're sending you this card because we thought we ought to. We hope there's no hard feelings. Sorry about the torture. P.S. Can we still have some of your lovely oil? Thank you. That chap's a Mark Allen. You know, he's the one who's supposed to have had the very close relationship with the chief torturer, Musa Kusa. It's quite a cosy name.
Great.
It sounds like an ABBA track. But they were saying that on the news they were worried that the relationship was troublingly close, and he sent a note saying, thanks for the oranges and the dates. And I thought, well, that is a troublingly close relationship. If they were going on dates, that is far too close.
But also, did you notice that Mark Allen, he then turns up in BP, and BP then get the big oil contract? And I thought, isn't that extraordinary coincidence?
It is extraordinary.
It is an extraordinary coincidence.
What are the chances? Like Dick Cheney making money out of Iraq. No. Unlikely, isn't it?
But I was also very shocked, you know, because we're always taught that the first thing that MI6 do, the first thing they're trained to do is to swallow things, bits of paper that shouldn't get out. And we read that this was all found in the British Embassy.
Surely that was the departing Gaddafi supporting Libyans deliberately leaving it there for them, wasn't it? I mean, as I understand it, the files were left virtually at the correct pages with the little yellow post-its telling people where to look.
It is the difference between the Americans and the British is so extraordinary. You'd know that extraordinary rendition for the Americans is, you know, the CIA flying a prisoner to a country to torture them, and in Britain we fly them on Ryanair and they confess to everything before they get there.
Basically, MI6 is made up of those Cambridge graduates who are so useless they can't even get their own series on Radio 4.
Oh, I'm hurt.
My father, who, you know, became a Tory cabinet minister, he was sussed out by MI6 when he was at Oxford. And there was a wonderful misunderstanding because they said to him, if there was a man that you most admire, who would that man be? And my father, who was studying philosophical logic, said Bertrand Russell. And he was virtually sort of shoved out of a moving car because, of course, he was a great peace activist. Anti-nuclear weapons.
So he wasn't allowed?
No, not with Bertrand Russell.
Did anybody ever try and poach you for MI5 or MI6 or any of those things? Did anybody come up to you and say...
If they did, I was far too drunk to be aware of it at the time. Which may be why they would have desisted.
Yeah,
My sister, I think, they sort of sniffed around a bit. Yes, but she didn't like the idea.
I didn't get approached once.
No, I didn't.
Nobody offered me any kind of job.
I got approached by MFI.
I'm still available for offers.
But usually, don't they want to recruit people who speak, some special... I mean, I speak Danish, but that doesn't seem to be of any use to anybody.
They don't.
Well, that's because Denmark doesn't have a nuclear bomb, I guess. Yeah. Well, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe there's a secret Danish nuclear weapons factory.
I don't think we have any secrets. We're a very open nation. I don't think... Do you know, for a while, because we have many, many parties in Denmark, we're a multi-party country, and for a while there was one party who did quite well, actually, and their defence policy for the whole of Denmark was to put red telephones all the way around the border, that when you picked up the receiver, it said, "We surrender in every known language." You would save on all those bombs and naughty things. I think it'll be fine. Papers found in an abandoned office in Tripoli suggest that MI5 and MI6 enjoyed a close working relationship with Colonel Gaddafi's security services and were complicit in rendition flights. Abdul Hakim Belhaj alleges CIA and MI6 injected him with truth serum before interrogating him, during which time they found out he owns a James Blunt album. And sometimes wears his wife's underwear for comfort purposes. 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, whose testimony has hacked off his old boss?
We're looking for clarity here in the phone hacking scandal. And it's a complicated business about people that don't know how much they know, they don't know whether they know anything, and they don't know how long they've not known how much. So I've read a bit about it, so if you'll forgive me, I want to sort the wheat out from the chaff. It's all to do with James Murdoch, who is the son of newspaper and media tycoon Rupert Murdoch, and what he said to the parliamentary investigation. And then you've got to add to this the subsequent declaration by Tom Crone and Colin Myler about what they may have discussed at length or not at length with James Murdoch when discussing the existence or non-existence of an email, which may or may not have included the details on how far-reaching the phone hacking had gone in 2008 or 2009.
Has anybody else in the room got an erection?
Anyway, now, bear with me, folks. There is a lot to get through here, but I'm going to sort it out for you once and for all, because all of this came to light because of a payment that was reportedly paid to Gordon Taylor.
Who's a football person.
He was, off the PFA. Taylor was reported to have been given £700,000 by News International, at which point anybody in senior management might have asked the question, is there anybody else that we've maybe or maybe not hacked into that might or might not want £700,000. Only an idiot wouldn't have asked that, OK? So let's cut to the chase. Here are the facts from all of that, and I apologise for going on at some length. Rupert Murdoch has got a son, James.
I do think that James Murdoch's appearance at this extraordinary thing, it, refusal to accept blame or to offer any useful answers, and I thought, oh, he's been training all those people at the Sky call centre when I ring up.
We're not going to get to the bottom of it, though, because it's been entrusted to an all-party select committee, and the trouble with that is it's the definitive sort of mixed ability grouping, and there's a couple of them who are born cross-questioners, but, in terms of the rest, they're interrogating abilities. It's a bit like having a panel comprised of Sherlock Holmes, Perry Mason, Dale Winton, Jim Bowen and Sooty. So just as Sherlock Holmes closes in on his prey and then Perry Mason goes in for the kill, it's Sooty's turn. And with one bound, they're free. And it's just no way to find things out.
You're probably wondering why I've invited you all here today. What's that, Sooty? The creepiest thing that's come out of all this is Tony Blair being godfather
to
the youngest grandchild, is it?
The twins, I think.
The youngest twin evil grandchildren of the evil emperor. This is how far removed these people are from the real world. It was in the Queen of Jordan invited them to go to the Jordan where the baptism could take place. And the reason they went there, because Jesus was baptized there. And you think, that shows a certain self-aggrandisement, doesn't it? They're looking for the spot, and Blair's saying, no, it was here, I remember.
But what is the theme here of the godparents? Is it Tony Blair, Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman? What are we looking at? Overpaid actors? I mean, it's just extraordinary.
But but not in the photographs. That's what fascinated me, was that...
The photographs were taken, but they weren't in it when they were developed.
So, on what basis... But on what basis do you accept a gig to be godparents where you say to somebody, no, obviously, we'd be honoured to be your child's godparents, but if it's all right with you, we can't be in the photos. Not that you're toxic or anything, we just can't be in the photos. But it must have been the most fantastic phone call, because Murdoch presumably rang up and saying, yeah, can you come to the baptism? We're holding it in the exact location where the Son of God was baptised. I don't know, it just seemed appropriate. Somehow, this is the humblest day of my life.
Dominic, you've spent many years working in the newspapers. Are you surprised by the whole phone hacking thing?
Well, what I was surprised about was the fact that everybody knew that it was going on, and indeed the public knew, because when Princess Diana was around, and Prince Charles and all the Camilla stuff, the Sun would say, here are these phones, and, you know, pay for a premium line, and everybody hoovered up this stuff. Yeah. And when Clive Goodman was sent down, and it was clear that he'd hacked into the phone of Prince Harry... I don't remember any great public outrage, just mystification, actually. Why is this person going to jail? And indeed, if it hadn't been for the Millie Dowler thing, I don't think the public would have cared very much.
According to former News of the World legal manager Tom Crone, James Murdoch was told about an email which suggested the newspaper's phone hacking was done by more than one rogue reporter. James Murdoch has denied that anyone at News of the World had any knowledge. Well, it's hard to disagree with that. 2 points to Fred. Dominic, who is relieved for their health after something finally passed?
Andrew Lansley,
yes.
Who's the health secretary.
He is.
And his NHS reform bill passed through the Commons third reading.
It's taken
this
a
week.
While.
Taken a while. There was supposed to be a revolt by the Lib Dem members of the coalition, but as with all these revolts, it seems not to have materialised.
Four Lib Dems voted against... I think that's brave. I mean, honestly, most Lib Dems wouldn't rebel in a Nando's if everyone else wanted a meat platter and they fancied a salad. Honestly, it's...
Yeah, I think before the election, everyone said, there are too many bureaucrats in the health service. We've got gazillions of managers and 12 times more extra managers than nurses and doctors. And so everyone agreed we've got to cut the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So he then produces this plan where they say we're going to stop all the PCTs and we're going to close down the strategic health authorities, which what do? We're going to give it to the doctors. And, of course, everybody was outraged and said that's not what we meant at all.
Well, certainly the Royal College of GPs are extremely worried about the proposals. I mean, I've got their statement here and it starts with, I think you should sit down.
It's incomprehensible, though. That's the genius of the Tories. They're using that kind of New Labour stealth micromanagement of imposing changes that are so boring that no one's got the energy to resist them. Because what the Tories used to do was really broad brush things, like they'd lure the miners to the surface and then set dragoons on them. But now they've managed to come up with things that are so intricately tedious that it takes somebody with the mirthless determination of Polly Toynbee, God bless her, to get through the fine print. Everybody's lost the will to live before they finish writing a placard to go on a demonstration. That's the genius of it. And, you know, it is privatisation by stealth, which is why they're doing it, because they're opening up all these things to competition. And, of course, private health companies don't want to do the difficult stuff. The NHS will be left with A&E. Because if you took the CEO of a private health company into A&E at 5 o'clock in the morning and say, do you think you could run... Has anyone been in A&E? It's like the outer fringes of the Jeremy Kyle show. Well, that's the great thing about the NHS. It doesn't mind if you're poor, clumsy or stupid. It will look out for you. There are people in A&E in the middle of the night who've slipped on their own sick, had a fight with a wheelie bin, got their head stuck in a bath plug or had an accident with a vacuum cleaner that I won't describe. The NHS deals with all those people, and there's no glamour in it, and there's no money to be made, and that's why that's all that the NHS is going to be left with.
The thing that worried me, Lord Howe, who's apparently a junior health minister, he said that this was wonderful for all the private groups. It presented them with huge opportunities, and it didn't matter one jot who provided NHS care. Well, that can't be right. I think if JCB get the job, I would be... extremely worried.
Yeah, just bury us all. Mm.
Lord Howe, a man whose name is a perfectly valid question. Okay, here's the bit I don't get. I don't get the thing about patients getting more choice, okay? I'm an arts graduate. Honestly, if they asked me, how do you want your liver transplant done? I have no idea.
Say well done. Never say medium.
Really?
Never say rare.
And the other thing is, if it's this whole thing about choice, I'm unlikely to change my mind. I'm unlikely to say I came for a liver transplant, but I noticed your fantastic display about the pancreas on the way in. Of course, these changes will only affect the NHS in England, won't they, Fred? I mean, I think, isn't the NHS in Scotland going to be ruined in a completely different way?
Everything's going to be better in Scotland, isn't it?
Of course it is, except the people.
You do realise we broadcast north of the border?
I'm aware of it, yes. Hello, everyone.
We've got him now, Jocks. We've got him now. He's on our side.
So, Dominic, do you think it was a good or a bad thing that they pushed forward with it when everybody, honestly, seems to be just slightly irritated?
Well, I have some doubts about this idea that competition is necessarily bad. I mean, if you think back, it's the 60th anniversary since they put up the Berlin Wall. And you had, on the one side, a country where, of course, there was no competition. If you wanted a shoe, it was the government shoe company. The cars were all the same manufacturer, and what happened? They had to actually build a wall to stop people fleeing the country where there was no choice. And I think that it's very condescending to the public to say, you wouldn't understand competition. Just take what you're given. It'll be good, trust us. We're the government.
They've never had to stop people fleeing from St. Thomas's Hospital to a Booba Hospital. They don't have snipers on Westminster Bridge picking off kidney patients.
The Health and Social Care Bill has finally passed through the House of Commons. However, the row continues about the level of support the bill has from doctors and nurses. It had been feared that Lib Dems would derail the bill. Who's ever feared a Lib Dem?
Do you think the Lib Dems had their backbones removed privately or under the...
2 points to Dominic. Andy, listen to this. I Predict a Riot by the Kaiser Chiefs.
They have a version for Morningside in Edinburgh, which is I Predict Disquiet.
Bert goes into a pub in Morningside. He says, I'd like a quickie. And the woman says, how dare you? Around here we call it a quiche.
Andy, who wants to ensure that there are even fewer benefits in the dock?
I was in America for the riots, which was annoying because we need a new fridge. But
you wouldn't have been able to carry a fridge. You'd have been hiding in someone's trainer while they carried it out of football.
Did you see the woman?
So can I just say, sorry. I'm not advocating putting a brick through Dixon's window.
No.
And can you get fridges in Dixon's? Actually, you can. Can you?
Yeah. I don't know.
See, white goods are just. I'm out of my comfort zone now.
Yeah. John Lewis.
Oh, we'd all have done John Lewis, wouldn't we?
You can tell he's turned 50, can't you?
It was horrible, though. It was scary. I mean, some of those kids nicking trainers were young enough to have made them, really. But taking away people's benefits, you kind of think, no, that I'm giving that power to sort of judges and magistrates. Judges are people who probably find it quite difficult to relate to people whose money isn't inherited anyway. And magistrates are just nosy weirdos with no qualifications whatsoever. Practical level, taking away money from people who don't have money and kicking them out of their council accommodation is unlikely to keep them sticking to the straight and narrow, especially when it's parents, because people say, oh, parents should control their child. Have you tried to control a child? I mean, they're huge now. I feel like Gulliver when I go out. I mean, you walk past a local secondary school, and I'm 6'4", as the audience here will vouch. But, I mean, children today are enormous. They're terrified. You can't control children. Just throw sticks for them and hope for the best. That's all. And people say, yes, let's put them in the army. Yeah, that's a good idea. Train them how to use lethal force.
I did wonder what had happened to my life, because the night that Croydon was on fire, I happened to be at a champagne reception in the BT Tower. And we honestly were standing there with champagne going, oh, yes, I think that is Croydon down there.
I should imagine the coverage here was quite excitable. You should have seen it in America, because we just had a lovely day out. We put the telly on and it went, London is burning.
But I love American news anyway, because the CNN has something called World Minute. Dominic, what did you think about Kenneth Clark referring to the people who went through the courts as the feral underclass?
I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it? And they're not feral, they're very well organised.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that. How can you be feral if you're on Facebook?
None of this would have happened, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, you know, when televisions were analog. Too heavy.
Yeah.
So, backing out of the shot, four of them with a corner each.
Actually, give us a hand, Davey. Put the Betamax down.
Following the recent riots, the government is considering radical proposals, including docking benefits from convicted criminals and making trainers look much less awesome. Cameron's change in attitude towards criminals is remarkable. He's now claiming when he said hug a hoodie, he meant as a form of restraint. 2 points to Andy. So at the end of round one, I can tell you that Jeremy and Fred have got 4 points, but so too have Dominic and Andy. We start round two with an advertisement from the Red Ruth Packet.
You rang UTAN Mobile Tanning Salon. Book for a party and the hostess is spayed for free.
Thanks to Mark Walker for sending us that. Jeremy, who found out that if you ask a frustrating question, you get a frustrating answer?
Nadine Dorries, two first names, the price of one. She sometimes says some quite strange things, sometimes not so strange, but fair play, she's entitled to express her opinion in the House of Commons as one of the few women there, but she sort of expressed the view that the Lib Dems were sort of ruling the roost, which I think is overstating their role. But what happened was the Prime Minister stood up and tried to say the lady is clearly frustrated about something or other, but said the word frustrated, and with one voice, all the men in the Commons went,
you know what she needs, eh?
Now, can I just say, Jeremy, that David Cameron has denied that he meant any innuendo in his comment, and he has said that if she wants an apology, he'll happily give her one.
Hold her on the doorstep and she can sit on his standing committee.
Can I just say that Nadine Dorries is an anagram of ironed sardine?
Were you bored today, Sandy?
I was, yes. I like this one. She wondered why the Liberal Democrats make up 8.7% of this parliament and yet they seem to be influencing our free school policy, health, many issues, immigration and abortion. And I was thinking about that and I think probably it works like homeopathy.
No, 8.7% is far too much.
Is it?
Oh, it's got to be
homeopathy.
Tiny. Homeopathy, it's got to be 0.00. The smaller the better.
Are you like a Prince Charles with homeopathy?
No, I think he's completely round the truth.
Nadine Dorries stormed out of the Commons during PMQs after a question designed to put Nick Clegg in his place resulted in David Cameron laughing at her. After Dorries stormed out of the chamber, a number of MPs got to their feet, not in an act of support, just because they hadn't realised you were allowed to leave. Nadine Dorries has been described as a Marmite MP. This is because, like Marmite, she's not very good at making speeches. Two points to Jeremy. Fred, who is going to be caught on film?
Something in my mind tells me this is Ken Clark suggesting that we should have cameras in the court.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a good thing or not. We do have them in Scotland, and I think what you're talking about here is video cameraing.
Yeah.
And there are certain things you won't be able to see.
Rather than a box brownie, you mean?
Well, that's what we've got in Scotland. You can get a picture with the accused for a fiver. For £10, you get to put the judge's wig on. It's great.
We have rather tasteful pastel drawings in this country.
Do you also have that interactive thing on the telly? To convict Dave, press one.
In a multiple trial, it'd be good if you got them all standing there and there'd a spotlight on them. And it was accused number four, you are, and then there's a timpani roll. But three to go, and the light goes out.
Cheryl would be nice, because she's from a poor background, and she would say, oh, a pet. I understand from your background it was almost inevitable growing up in the care system as you did, without any positive role models, that you'd end up in the pickle area in the day. And instead of going to prison, you'd end up in Chicago in the West End.
Ken Clark has announced the historic move to allow cameras to film judges passing sentence at the end of court cases. I just remind our listeners it's not going to be anything like Judge John Deed. It will instead be entertaining and believable. If the cameras are allowed, not only will defendants have to go through the indignity of being tried on television once, it will then relentlessly be repeated on Dave. 2 points to Fred. Dominic, who has been pointing out the difference between a teacher and a prophet?
Is this free schools?
It is profit in that sense, yes.
Yes. They've just launched the first, I think, of 24 free schools. They're free in the sense that they can do pretty much what they like. They don't have to stick to the national curriculum. They can have nice long hours and just spend their whole time learning Latin, which I think was... Toby Young arrived at Oxford from a comprehensive and was very distressed to find Boris Johnson there. He was depressed by Boris being able to talk in Latin fluently, and he felt quite worried about that ever since, the differential. And so this was his attempt. He wants to create a kind of nation of Boris Johnsons.
I think we should just pause there and contemplate that.
I learned Latin up to 16, and I have to say it's been pretty useless in Italian restaurants. I don't quite know why I did it. I mean, I learned some Latin jokes, but you wouldn't want to hear them.
I think we need it.
Really? Well,
yeah,
okay. Well, a centurion goes into a bar and says, I'd like a martinis, please. And the barman says, do you mean martini? And the centurion says, if I'd wanted a double, I'd have asked for one. From learning Latin at the age of 16, so I didn't recommend it.
Do you know, up and down the country, people are even now reaching for their Basildon bond, going, we must have Dominic Lawson more often.
I think the main thing with Toby Young is he's just got to come to terms with the fact that he's bald. Because he's constantly... It's one vanity project after... Oh, I'll write a novel, I'll write a play. Just deal with it. You're bald. Try and resolve it in your own mind and stop trying to desperately seek approval from the public with all these weird things you get involved with. And who is this army of philanthropic individuals who are going to open free schools? The only people, really, who are going to be interested in doing that, apart from businessmen and faith groups, are the sort of women who have way too much time on their hands and husbands not quite rich enough to buy them a shop selling local art. And you see them in the school playground hustling, you think, oh God, within a week you'll be on the PSA, within a year you'll be on the governing body, and if nobody stops you, you'll end up a magistrate. And of course, the Conservative Party is full of women like that, ladies who work tirelessly to raise funds to help the starving in Africa, but privately can't help wondering if perhaps independence hasn't been a bit much for the poor devils. Actually, do we really want chaos in education? Wouldn't there be... I mean, you know...
It's not chaos. It's
chaos.
A Swedish idea.
What, so you get your school in a flat pack and put it together yourself? Swedes are alcoholics who commit suicide all the time and live in the dark.
No!
It's not a good idea. You need to have some unity. People should be studying the same things. This country was better when everybody watched Morecambe and Wise at the same time. The next day they all talked about it.
We will breed a generation of tall, muscular, blonde children with an odd proclivity for camp pop music and saunas. It'll be marvellous. Names.
Yes.
A poll of 1,000 teachers has listed the names.
Some names mean trouble.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what I liked, the top names likely to signify trouble were Aaron and Abby. Do you get the idea? They just started at the top of the list and said, oh, do you know what? We'll just have those.
That was
two.
A good list, though, wasn't it? Aaron, Abby, Callum, Chloe, Satan. Teacher killer. If a kid turns up at school and his parents have christened him teacher killer, he's likely to be trouble.
Do you think that people with the same name share similar traits?
Most people called doctor are GPs.
Are they? Andy Hamilton and Andy Murray, what do you have in common? Neither of you are going to win Wimbledon.
Just steady as you go. Andy Hamilton has got a fair chance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very unfair on Andy Murray.
Yeah, he's going to
win.
Yes, why not?
I think he will eventually.
He's irritating. He needs to calm down.
He's quite good
at a bat and ball game. And the only reason he's that good is he's so tall.
Rubbish.
He's just big. It's the same as basketball. They should measure them before and dispense with the game.
Yeah.
Your games master left a real mark on you, didn't he?
I was good at hockey because you get a weapon.
It's not a proper game.
is you get a weapon.
It's not. It's like a broom with a...
No, it's not. You can kill someone with a hockey stick. You're not supposed
to.
I changed schools at second year in senior school, so I was about 13 and a half, and my first senior school had been a soccer-playing school. Then I went to Perth Academy, which was a rugby-playing school, and I had no rugby skills at all. I had no idea what to do. And I played for all of 10 minutes my entire career, and I was sent off for refusing to take off my duffel coat. Do you know what? This is absolutely true. The teacher looked at me and said, what is it with you, Macaulay? I said, I don't know what to do. He said, right, well, get off my pitch. Go and watch the girls play hockey. What a punishment.
The first batch of free schools have opened around the country, along with the call from Nick Clegg that they should not be run for profit. Union leaders said Nick Clegg's call was too little, too late, which coincidentally was exactly what was written on my first school report. 2 points to Dominic. Andy, who thinks good poetry should be short and tweet?
Oh, this is the Poet Laureate.
It is.
Carol Ann Duffy, which is a good name for a Poet Laureate because it's got a little bit of meter in it, a little bit of natural. Carol Ann Duffy. She's small and rather fluffy. Her poems are quite roughy. So I drifted off there into parallel world. She was saying that texting is good because it trains young people's minds for writing poetry, because it teaches them to condense thought. And I see what she means, provided the thought you're condensing isn't a banal thought. And I think, given that most texts are, I'm here, where are you? But I say that as someone who's never texted in his life. If God had wanted me to text, he'd have given me two thumbs. That's the way I look at it.
I was telling my son about the... I mean, she's a wonderful woman, Caroline Duffy. I was telling him that she grew up in a house without any books at all. He said, what, just a Kindle?
What does the Poet Laureate do? They just write poems for
national events.
Weddings, sure. And bar mitzvahs and... Well, yeah, bar mitzvahs, she, right? I mean, well, like...
Her first poem was a sonnet about the MP's expenses scandal. Sonnet? I could have done it in four letters, but... But apparently she is second only to Shakespeare as the subject of choice for undergraduates studying English. Third place, Pokemon. Poet Laureate Carol Ann Duffy claims that text messaging and the use of social networking sites is a modern form of poetry. Duffy said that texting is a way of saying more with less. She's right. I can't think of a single poem which wouldn't be improved by the removal of all the vowels. 2 points to Andy. And at the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Fred have got 8 points, but it is still neck and neck, for so too have Dominic and Andy. Before we start round three, here is a sign spotted in a window in Johannesburg.
Atlas Finance, always here for you. We've moved.
And our thanks to Kirsten Whitworth for sending us that. Fred, who must put down their paintbrushes forthwith?
Ah, this is the repainting of the Forth Bridge. It should be finished by Christmas.
Actually, when Network Rail announced it, they said it would be finished by December. They didn't say which year, did they?
No, they didn't. No. I mean, I think all that's happened is they've got somebody that's come in to work for them that used to work in the building trade, and that's all he knows how to say, it'll be finished by Christmas.
Haven't they got a new paint or something?
Yeah, they've got a special new paint, and they say that it's not going to be repainted for 20 or 30 years. Although, I think the chap said, no painter will be required for 20 or 30 years, but workers will be required to touch it up with paint. But they're not painters. My worry is that all over Fife and the Lothians, there's now all these unemployed painters going to be looking for work and turning up to do home decorating going, have you thought about red? I think your front room would suit a sort of red metallic.
But the giveaway would be that he's got a 2,000-foot ladder.
But the scaffolding will come down. That's the first time in, I think, about 20 years that the bridge will have been nude, as intended, not with little bits covered up.
I never understood why it had to be painted in the first place, I have to say, because why do you have to paint? I mean, don't paint the Eiffel Tower.
Do they not?
No, they don't paint the Eiffel Tower.
Slipshod what? French. They used to stick wood chip on it and leave it.
It took 7 years to build and 10 to repaint it. It would have been quicker to just keep knocking it down and build it again.
Do you know, There is another bridge going to be built because the road bridge can't cope with all the traffic now and it's deteriorating, so there's going to be a third, fourth bridge. Any golfers in? Not one.
These people have lives.
Yeah. Thank God for the decline of Freemasonry.
No, this is a great joke, right? Because Tom Watson, you all know who Tom Watson is, don't you?
So, yes, just, I want to get to a drink now. Please him.
All right, okay. So the Americans were all coming over. They were going to be playing in the Open Championship at St Andrews, and Tom Watson organised to charter Concorde, and they came over, and over Edinburgh, heading for Fife, you cross over the river, and they looked out the window, and Tom said to the guy, gee, he said, what's that down there? And somebody said, that's the Forth. And he said, that's a hell of a water hazard.
Can I just say, that's the kindest laugh I've ever heard. The painting of the Forth Bridge will finally be completed on December the 9th. Scottish engineers have encased it in a weatherproof chemical bond that will last 25 years. A fancy way of saying they've deep-fried it. The bridge... According to the Telegraph, the bridge sees up to 200 train movements a day. Oh, you'd think people would flush in open country. 2 points to Fred. Dominic, who went on holiday and took more than a little bit of home with them?
Now, this was in the town of Haverford West.
Yes.
A whole area of Coronation Avenue was... There were 49 of them, and they all went off for their summer holiday together. Actually, I thought it was interesting. I mean, maybe the motive was that they didn't really want to see their neighbours' holiday snaps, and if they all went off together, then they would be spared this.
You couldn't organise that with 49 people going on TripAdvisor, could you? It used to be, in the old days, you'd go to sort of Thomas Cook and you'd say, oh, I'd like to go somewhere, please. And they'd say, oh, where would you like to go to? Oh, I don't know, where's sunnier and friendlier than here? And they'd say, oh, pretty much everywhere, actually.
TripAdvisor is bewildering, isn't it? Because you look a place up and there'll be an entry that says, we stayed here, we had the loveliest 2 weeks of our life, the staff were wonderful. And the next entry says, the staff were scum.
It was Thomas Cook, actually, who took these people. It's the largest group booking Thomas Cook have taken since their Tripoli branch got a call from an M. Gaddafi.
It's very nice, Haverford West.
It is lovely. I've had many good times in Haverford West and the lovely place of Solva, which probably never gets a mention on Radio 4. So
Solva?
Yeah.
My wife swam with a dolphin off the coast of Solva, a wild dolphin.
Me
She's
too.
Out of control, that woman. She's out of control.
His name was Simo.
Yes, I remember the dolphin very well.
Well, you swam with him as well.
I did, yes.
Did he make sexual advances to you?
No, but I think his gaydar was very, very well tuned.
Because that's what he did with my wife. He was very friendly indeed, and in the end, we had to get her out of the water. Because he was pulling her by his fin, then she realised it wasn't his fin.
How was it on this programme that we managed to go from serious events in Libya to bestiality with a dolphin?
Never watch Flipper again now.
49 residents from the same street in Haverford West have all gone on holiday to Ibiza together. The organiser of the holiday, Paul, said, we're a friendly bunch with similar interests. Another holidaymaker, when interviewed, said, we're being treated well. Paul is looking after us. Please do what he says. 2 points to Dominic. Andy, whose convictions are so strong she has them emblazoned on her chest?
This is this pensioner lady.
Yep.
She very much doesn't want to be sort of kept alive at the end of her life by technology and medicine. So she's had the words, do not resuscitate, tattooed on her chest. But the touch that I really loved was that on her back, she's had the words PTO tattooed. Which I think is just, there's something so wonderfully English about that. Practical, polite, quite funny.
I've got a tattoo.
What's that?
It says, not actual size. I also have one that says, no coins, but that's from a previous...
Was that when you were a charity box?
Previous career.
Do you know what? There was. You remember those little charity boxes which were little boys?
Yes. You remember? Little boy polio, wasn't it?
I was. One day I stopped outside the newsagent and I had a bit of change, I thought. So I was putting these coins and I was singing to myself as I was doing it. And this little girl came up to me, very concerned, looked at me, said, "He's not real."
And then she put a coin in your head.
81-year-old Joy Tompkins of Downham Market, Norfolk, has made her final wishes clear by having "Do not resuscitate" tattooed across her chest and PTO tattooed on her back. It was thought she also had a noughts and crosses grid tattooed on her bottom, but actually she'd been sitting on a wicker chair waiting... waiting for the tattooist. 2 points to Andy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
I'm indebted to Woolwich Building Society. But apart from that, I'm indebted to Michael Nestor. And he says, "Not from a newspaper, I'm afraid, but I came across this when renewing my car tax and have to share it with someone. So it's a very, very lonely man." It says, "Warning, do not use your browser's back button as this may cause your transaction to fail and you may have to start again. If you do need to change any of the information you've entered so far, please select cancel and start again."
Mr. McCauley.
This is from the Northern Echo. It's a report on the World Spoons Playing Championship, which had held at Sedgefield. Judges had to disqualify competitors, one for playing connected spoons and one for a set of bones, the Irish tradition from which spoon playing originates. The host, Peter Brooks, said one guy had been playing the bones for 65 years, and despite putting on a fantastic show, the judges felt that if they allowed bones, then next year people would be playing castanets, and that would be madness.
Mr. Lawson.
This is from an advertisement in the friendly duplicate Bridge Holidays brochure. 5-star Hilton Tubba on the Red Sea. 14 nights, £1,260, all-inclusive. In very safe area. Only 100 metres from the Israeli border.
Mr. Hamilton.
This is from Philip Sykes of West Kirby, and it's a press cutting from The Guardian, and it says, "The wedding of Ed Miliband and Justine Thornton has been like no other among senior British politicians except Gordon Brown and Edward Heath."
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Fred have got 12 points, but by a quirk of fate, this week's winners with 13 are Dominic and Andy. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the evening news sent to us by Becky Lorden.
The Norfolk branch of the St John Ambulance is organising a fire walk as part of a new fundraising drive. The event starts at 6 p.m. and includes a barbecue.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Fred McCauley, Andy Hamilton, Dominic Lawson and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Gareth Gwynn, John Hunter and Rodri Crooks, with additional material by Benjamin Partridge, Andy Walton and Jane Lammercraft. The producers were Victoria Lloyd and John Pocock.